Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
As much as I enjoyed my job as a barman, I wasn't too fond of working holidays. The pub I worked at was always busy during the festive season because our kitchen offered a huge carvery and families flocked to the opportunity of being served a feast. We usually allowed random walk-ins, but on the day before Christmas in 2021, our tables were filled up and we were bustling to the point we had to close the doors to reservations only. Around my bar, I had all sorts of characters seated, mostly loners, clearly without company for the night. One man sat in the corner of my left wing and made comments to every female that came up to order a drink. He was balding and aging gracelessly. His teeth were stained yellow and his nose wrinkled in permanent disgust. I kept an eye on him as he complimented one lady on her hairstyle, and she shot me a look that almost begged for assistance from this old creep. "Would look nice on you too, pal," I responded on her behalf while sliding the lady her drink, and she quickly hurried away after flashing me a smile in gratitude. "You just want them all to yourself," he finally spat at me. He was obviously referring to the woman I just helped escape with his remarks. "I don't know what you mean," I answered, and tended to a customer at his side. I had no intention of getting into it with this man. I resumed fixing up drinks for a large table when I saw from the corner of my eye as the old man dipped white powder into a cocktail I had served the woman next to him. She was waiting with her back towards the bar, and because she was having a conversation with a friend, she hadn't heard me present the drink. My blood boiled, and I acted quickly, rushing to grab the drink and tossing it before pouring a new one. I had it ready just as she spun around to pick it up and wander off. Fuming, I wanted so badly to call him out because I knew the best course of action would be to alert the authorities. I halted service and stepped aside to phone the police, who usually responded fairly quickly to these reports, but tonight they were delayed, likely due to it being Christmas and all. When I manned the bar again, the old man was still there, shooting daggers with his gaze. He ordered a whiskey, and so I begrudgingly poured him one. As I was sliding it over the counter, I considered telling him to leave, but I also wanted him there for the cop's arrival. I was still weighing my options when, suddenly, I was hit in the face with excruciating pain. My eyes stung and my vision blurred. The old creep had flung the drink right at me, shattering the glass square in my face. "Mind your own damn business," he snarled, but I couldn't focus my view on him as he disappeared into the crowd. A colleague rushed over to help me clear the alcohol from my eyes. There were cuts down my cheeks from broken glass, but luckily, no damage was done to my sight. I was taken home and left just a little shaken up. The following night, I went in to cover my shift, even though management told me to take the day off. But I'm very stubborn, and my parents lived a while away, so I didn't exactly feel like spending Christmas night alone. That evening was far more relaxing than the previous night. Spirits were great. Customers and co-workers alike all passed me small gifts, and the night ended on a high note. By closing time, I offered to lock up, and nobody protested. A colleague told me to just ring the last customer up before thanking me and clocking out. I reached the farthest booth in the pub and saw with immediate alarm that the last customer was the same man from last night. His eyes were inflamed, and he sat motionless at the table, watching me approach with a sinister smile. My body tensed up, and I gulped down fear, trying desperately to hide my nerves and play it cool. I told him I needed to settle the bill as we were closing. He was unresponsive and only sat there smiling at me. As I went to ring him up, he uttered, "You should have minded your own business." My actions may be questionable to some people, yet I had little choice in the situation. With sweaty palms, I offered him one last drink on me, but then he would have to leave. He simply nodded. I led him up to the bar where he could take a seat, and I went around to pour him a whiskey. As I watched him gulp down the drink, there came a long moment of silence before he swiftly reached over the counter and grabbed me by the collar. The punches came before I could react. An agonizing blow hit my nose, and I blocked the incoming attacks the best I could. His hand moved from my shirt to my throat, and I began to see black as he strangled me. Thankfully, his grip eased up just as the pressure became unbearable, and then his hold loosened. With a growl, he slumped forward, unconscious. I found no pulse when I checked him, and I closed off the night by dumping his body in the alleyway of a neighboring pub. I knew the staff would find him and suspect alcohol poisoning. In serving his drink, I managed to slip a couple of pills into his glass from behind the bar, giving him back a taste of his own medicine. Though I never intended on killing the man. I'm choosing to share this story anonymously, because maybe, just maybe, the guilt still haunts me. Although some might argue that I did society a favor. At the age of 30, I hit a new low in my life. I lost my career due to medical reasons, and my boyfriend broke up with me. After he moved out of our one-bedroom apartment, I knew I wasn't going to be able to make rent living alone. Luckily, one of my friends put in a good word for me at the corporate store his dad owned, and soon I was hired as general manager a month before Christmas. It was the perfect new start, and I began picking up the pieces of myself. The job was great, but since my friend really overstated the tragic story of my situation in order for me to get the position, nearly everyone in the workforce knew what I was going through. One man in particular, Paul, immediately took a liking to me. He was painfully average looking. Not necessarily unattractive, but you could tell he didn't have the best self-care. His clothes were sizes too large and clung loosely to his body. His acne-ridden skin probably never saw a bottle of moisturizer, and he carried himself with terrible posture. Despite his unkempt appearance, Paul was really nice, if not awkwardly chivalrous. He went out of his way to make sure I settled into the role, backing me up with every task that required the stern voice of a manager. He was an introvert and didn't interact with other employees at all. Yet, we got on pretty well and ate lunch together almost every day. When Christmas drew near, the company planned a secret Santa. They sent out emails one night with names of our randomly assigned persons, along with the gift cost amount. Although the money was tight, I really enjoyed the concept. I hadn't spoken much to the girl whose name I got, but I had a cute teddy bear tucked away somewhere that I was planning on gifting her along with chocolate. I got up from my laptop and began searching the closet. While looking through the box of clothes, I suddenly realized that I hadn't seen my cat, Cheddar, in days. He wasn't an indoor cat and always just showed up for food. The last time I could recall feeding him was the same night my boyfriend left. A little irritated, I texted my ex asking if he had taken Cheddar, but he just left me on read. I half expected him to, because we didn't end on good terms. Figuring that he likely took Cheddar, I continued my search and found my stuffed bear before retiring to bed. Around midnight, I woke up to a sound coming from outside my bedroom and expected it to be Cheddar returning late. So I got up and placed a bowl of cat food near the windowsill. When I peeked out of the curtains to call out to him, my blood ran cold. There was a shadow of a man standing right against the window, hands pressed against the glass, trying to see inside. In addition to being engulfed in darkness, he was also dressed in all black, and a hood was pulled over his head to cover his face. He saw me and immediately bolted away. Terrified, I made sure to lock every door, and there was no signs of attempted entry. I called the police, and they sent out a car to circle the block, but because there was no evidence of a crime being committed, a patrol car was the extent of their help. Needless to say, I didn't sleep that night, and when I dragged into work with baggy eyes, Paul went through every effort to cheer me up. "Do you want coffee?" He trailed after me as I started with stock control. "Did they get the guy? Do you feel scared?" he persisted, and I was starting to get annoyed. I don't know why I told him what happened. "Are you all right?" he asked while following me to the head office, and I felt myself finally about to snap. I turned on my heels and shouted at him. "Yes, yes, okay, I'm okay. No, I don't want coffee. Now go, you're supposed to be on the floor stacking the pallets that came in this morning." You could see from his expression that he was just bewildered, maybe even hurt. I never yelled at people, but with so much worry about it, I just lost it. Paul visibly sank in dejection and walked away like a child who had just been told off, which instantly made me feel bad. The rest of the day was busy, yet I preferred it so. I went home while reciting an apology that I would give Paul the following day when I felt more refreshed after some sleep. Our Secret Santa exchange was the next morning, and my guilt increased tenfold when Paul walked up and handed me this neatly wrapped gift, revealing that he was my Secret Santa. "I think you'll really like it. It's something you've probably missed," he declared with a clear sincerity. His head slightly dipped forward, and his gaze nervously scanning the ground. I thanked him and apologized profusely, which didn't seem to impact him whatsoever. He sulked away, and I knew I'd have to do better to make it up to him. During lunch hour, I decided to grab Paul a meal and hopefully clear the air. I didn't like working in an unpleasant atmosphere. I left my office and ran into my female colleague carrying a gift bag. She presented it to me and said that she was my assigned Secret Santa. A little confused, I thanked her and retreated to my office to find Paul's gift on the desk, still unopened. I quickly moved to unwrap it. With every piece of paper I unfolded, the present emitted a putrid smell that only grew stronger. Curiosity alone made me open the box, and I caught a glimpse of a ginger fluffed covered in red liquid. Inside the box was my cat, Cheddar, with a knife impaled through his neck. I vomited all over the office floor and remained sick for days after. Paul was nowhere to be found. His name wasn't on company records, and he was never even an employee. When I questioned the staff members, they told me that he acted very hostile towards them and presented himself as an entirely different person in my presence. He also claimed to be my assistant, and they thought nothing more of it. As strange as it might have sounded, I never got the impression that Paul's gift was intended to be malevolent. Thinking back on how he handed it over to me with his downcast expression, he acted like he truly thought I'd like the present. I can only ponder if, in his twisted mind, he actually believed it to be a thoughtful favor. When I was around 14 years old, back in the late 90s, there was a girl my age living down the street. We walked to school together often, and she very obviously liked me. My high school years revolved around my three friends and our nerdy game of Dungeons and Dragons, so I had no interest in dating. Kathy's obsession with me surpassed any type of little crush, and I can't remember exactly how it started or why she was infatuated by me. She was probably out of my league, with her dark, beautiful eyes and curly brown hair. I was not a boy that girls chased after, nor did I desire the attention. I suppose it was flattering to have someone like me, but I was still annoyed that Kathy began showing up to our game nights. She asked for an invitation from my hormonal friends. Thus, I sat opposite Kathy every Friday night while she stared at me instead of focusing on our fictional storyline. She also ruined many sessions by not adhering to the rules. She played a fairy character, and whenever I saw her place the dreaded figure on the board, I internally cringed. Kathy made her hero infinitely powerful, violating combat rules and arguing any attack against her. My friends tolerated it, sometimes even defending her exploits. I knew Kathy wasn't there for the game. She was there to invade my personal space. This much became apparent one night, a few days before Christmas. From the moment we started setting up the board, Kathy insisted we should go out instead to look at decorated houses and sing some carols. That night was my turn to be the dungeon master, meaning I decided on events during our adventures on the board game. I told her that she was free to go out, but we had quests to complete. Kathy's love for Christmas, luckily, exceeded anything she felt for me, because she gave me a dirty look and told me that I would probably regret this and left. We carried on with the game and killed her character off during the episode, which went against rules, but she broke plenty more. As petty as it was, I went to bed just past 1 a.m., feeling satisfied with myself. I climbed under the sheets with a happy sigh. Then I felt something bumpy under my pillow. When I lifted the cushion, I found the figurine of Kathy's D&D fairy character laying there. I picked it up and inspected the statue, noticing that the wings had been broken off and the plastic eyes carved out. Even though I had essentially removed her character from our game, this was a bit excessive, if not disturbing. After I sat back up, I could hear a quiet hum in the distance. It sounded like Kathy murmuring a Christmas carol. Considering how late it was and my parents being asleep, I freaked out. Still, I checked my window and confirmed my fears. Kathy was standing outside in pitch darkness, singing in a low whisper. She was wearing a Christmas dress, and her eyes met mine. Even in the dark, I could see her smirking. She sang every lyric of a carol in an eerily slow pace. On the second day of Christmas, my true love brought to me. She paused and lifted her backpack, retrieving something that I couldn't make out in the poor light until it struck my window. I jumped as the dead turtle dove made an impact with the glass and blood splattered everywhere. Kathy immediately reached into her bag just as I went to open the window. I noticed it was already opened by a crack. She must have snuck in to plant the figurine under my pillow. I swung the window open and called out to her in a loud whisper. What are you doing, Kathy? Go home! She held up a second dead bird by its legs as her wide eyes, encircled with dark rings, bore into me. Her face carried no emotion when she hurled the dove straight at me. It went past my head and landed inside on my bed. feathers and blood stained on my sheet. Up close, I could see that she butchered the poor thing. Much like her board game statue, the wings of the bird were ripped off, the eyes were gouged out, and she had sliced it open from below the beak, vertically down the neck and breast. The bird's organs peeled from the wound, and a rotten smell filled the room. Terrified and pissed off, I looked back up to cuss her out just as she walked off, humming a very haunting carol that decreased in volume the further away she got. Afterwards, I had to take a shower and washed my bed, although the memory of the event still kept me from sleeping that night. The following afternoon, my friends showed up at my door with a smiling Kathy accompanying them. They felt bad for killing her off and agreed to go caroling. They applied enough peer pressure to have me join as well. As we walked down the street, I felt her constant burning gaze on me. "I knew you'd regret passing on Christmas lights and carols." She beamed a knowing smile and slipped her hand into mine. I quickly pulled my arm away and anxiously turned back on the sidewalk. My friends called after me as I sprinted home, and Kathy screamed at the top of her lungs. When I looked back, she was on the ground, thrashing around, biting herself on her forearms and clawing at her eyes. I suppose she scared off my friends during her instantaneous meltdown because they ran after me, and we all got back to my house where I proceeded to tell them everything. We didn't see Kathy for the remainder of the holiday, and she mysteriously switched schools when the new year came around. After some time, news spread that her family was moving. On the same day the U-Haul truck drove past my house, I found Kathy's D&D figurine, along with some white feathers on our doorstep, covered in a crimson-red substance. I suppose that was her parting gift. Now, decades later, I can only hope Kathy got the psychiatric help that she needed.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.